the tabletop takeaway.
Game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop takeaway.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Charlie McCarron.
I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
I'm Ananda Gunaratne.
And we are starting our new series on memory games.
Oh, shoot. I forgot. Sorry.
So our first memory game is Trio. And I picked this game because it reminds me of the original game Memory that we all played as kids, where you have to have cards face down on the table and you flip up cards and have to remember where they are. But Trio has a nice spin on that mechanic. The idea is you have a hand of cards. They're numbers 1 through 12. And there are some cards in the middle. And you are trying to get trios, which is three of the same number. Each number is only represented in the deck three times. So in order to get a trio, you have to get all of that number. And the twist is, so you arrange your hand from lowest to highest, and on your turn, you ask, you can ask another player, what's your lowest card, or what's your highest card, and they show it to everybody. And then you ask, you could ask the same person again, what's your next highest card, or you could switch to another player, say, hey, Trevor, what's your highest card, and then if they match, say Ananda and Trevor both had 12s, and maybe I have a 12 in my hand, ooh, then I can reveal that, and I found a trio, and I collect those cards and put them in front of me. The other thing you can do, instead of asking a player, you can just flip one of the cards that was face down in the middle, and then you will try to remember where that is. You have to put it back face down. But the thing is that it is so fun about this game, every card that's revealed gives a little more information to the next players. The game ends when someone gets either three trios, so three sets of three.
A trio of trios.
Or the sevens are golden, and if you get the trio of sevens, you instantly win. They did that because the sevens are hardest to get to. They're usually in the middle of your hand. And you, as the game goes, you're like whittling down your hand, the lows and the highs. So it's quite hard to get to the sevens.
Because you can only use the cards on the ends of your hand.
The highest and lowest.
Yeah. And we also played spicy mode, which is a slightly different way to end the game.
It felt pretty much the same to me.
Yeah, essentially it's another way to score where certain trios have to be connected to other numbers.
Yes, well, I'd say it's not so much another way to score. You're scoring the same way. It's that the scoring requirements for winning are slightly different.
Sure.
So you
sure.
could win with just two trios if they're the exact combination that you need.
Yeah, like two and nine makes a trio or something like that.
Or you could be Ananda and unfortunately get a trio of trios and still not win because they were not connected.
Yeah. So, but overall, really slick game and pretty fun. And I guess as kicking off this memory series, what did you guys think of the memory aspect to this game?
I thought it was really, really tied in really well. Being able to have the center board where things are replaced back into their position, in addition to remembering where the player's cards are, like, okay, have you played a card from your highest yet from the last time that I knew what it was? And then you can kind of track people and see if you have that current information. It's definitely, I could see it getting a little unwieldy at like six players. Trying to remember where five other people's cards are in their hands could be a little funkier. But I dig it, yeah.
Well, I think what really helps it is that you mostly only care about the cards on the ends of your hand.
Right.
And so the focus that gives means you're looking out for a couple of very specific things. Now, to be good at the game, you do want to remember where the other cards are because you'll care about them eventually. but at any particular moment, the game gives you a very clear indication of what it is you're looking for, the highest, your highest and lowest card.
You're not trying to check six different cards across. It's just, you know, highest and lowest. And so, okay, have I seen a one recently? Is there a one out here? Okay, great. No, there's not a one. So now you have to go digging for it in the center or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like having that kind of risk reward of going to the center and revealing that information that everyone will have access to until that card is picked up is really interesting, especially as a memory game.
Yeah.
I like that being a little bit bigger too. I think you said at a higher player count that gets smaller.
Yeah, the deck is the same size for all players. So your hand gets smaller and the cards in the middle get smaller.
Yeah, I like that being a little bit larger. So there's more to kind of keep in your mind and play around with. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit like Memory meets Go Fish.
Memory Fish.
I like it better than either of those games, honestly.
Same.
Because I think in Go Fish, I guess I haven't played Go Fish in a while, but
do you have any threes?
Yeah, from my vague recollection, I think there is an aspect of Memory in Go Fish, isn't there? Like just what people are asking for.
Asking for, and then you like try to ask them for that.
Right, but because it doesn't have the same limits on your hand, but you know that you can only play from the edges, you have to keep track of a lot more things, I feel like, in Go Fish.
Well, and I think you draw new cards too and stuff like that in Go Fish. So like your hand is changing and you have access to all of your hand
time. That's a good point. In this game, your hand does not change.
Right.
Well, no, sorry, it does change, but only to remove cards, never to add them.
It keeps it, makes it more streamlined as time goes on.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it takes something from Go Fish that could be interesting in that game, except it's too simple. The idea that the question you ask gives away something from your hand.
Mm-hmm.
So like in Go Fish, it's really, it's kind of stupid because, well, if I ask for that, I probably have it in my hand. But in this game, you ask, what's your highest card? It tells you I probably have a high card, like a 12, because if, say my hand is, my lowest card's a 4 and my highest is a 12. I'm not going to ask about lowest card because probably there's ones and twos blocking the four.
Right.
So I'm probably going to ask for highest card. And then if I fail at that, you know, you probably have a hint that I have a high card.
That's a really good point because, it does add just enough ambiguity to make it work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, keeping the information somewhat hidden is really important, I think, for this kind of game because it's so simple. I mean, 36 cards, I think, the entire deck.
Being able to ask questions without revealing exactly what you have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's like my rule of thumb with designs where it's like you want there to be hints, not total randomness.
Right.
Not totally known, but like somewhere in the middle is the way to go.
And that would be for basically any game where you are asking other people for information, right?
Sure.
In ways that it's going to reveal some information about you.
I mean, what other games are like that where you're asking a question that reveals something about you? Spyfall would be
Spyfall.
One. Where, but that's different.
But in Spyfall, it's a signaling game, right? You're trying to signal to other people
that you know what's going on.
That you know the same thing. So asking a question that reveals information about you is not a problem in that game.
Well, except that it could tell the spy.
Yes, but it's not a problem in the sense that you don't care that much if your teammates know what your motivations are.
Right.
Because you want them to think that, or you want them to understand your motivations.
Mm-hmm.
And the spy lacks some of the context, so it's easier for your teammates to pick up on things the spy doesn't.
Sure.
But I think, let's see.
Well, first of all, like what games are you asking questions of other players? Because
I almost said Guess Who, but like
that popped in my mind too.
But it's like it doesn't have that same feedback, right?
Well, it doesn't matter to your opponent who it is that you're looking for.
Yeah,
right.
In Guess
you don't
Who.
Give away anything when you ask. Do they have blonde hair?
In Cryptid, you're asking other people questions.
Yeah.
In fact, in most competitive logical induction games, there is some aspect of revealing information with what you choose to do. Like in Zendo or in Cryptid, you are giving away information.
Visitor. Captain Sonar.
Captain Sonar.
Oh, yeah.
Just your actions of trying to say like, oh, I'm going to attack at this point. And then you can kind of judge where they might be based on how their attack went.
Yeah. Hmm. Wow. Yes, there are lots of games where the questions you ask and the actions you take reveal information where it would be good to have some ambiguity.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't take that as your takeaway, I'm taking it.
You go for it. You go okay. for it. I have another takeaway.
Okay, yeah. So my takeaway is what Charlie just pointed out, which is that in games where there is information that you are revealing by the questions you ask or the actions you take, you want to have some degree of ambiguity as to what it is you want. So when you design the questions that players can ask each other, if that's part of the game, you want to make sure that there's ambiguity as to the motivations of the player asking the questions, unlike in Go Fish, where it's completely obvious what you want.
Yeah.
Why do you want these threes?
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. So my takeaway is related to the memory aspect. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things we'll probably find out in this series is that forgetting things is kind of funny.
Yeah. Especially when other people remember it.
Yeah, when other people remember it. Like, I felt clever because I had a system for remembering some of the cards in the middle, but I forgot other things. But you guys didn't see that. But it reminds me of Hanabi too.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a double-edged sword because, like, people feel stupid if they forget stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if I obviously could have really tracked all those cards in the middle, but, you know, not everyone's got a perfect memory. So it happens. And Hanabi, I think it's nice and funny. I don't know if it's better or worse that it's cooperative. Because it's like, well, I forgot and I screwed it up for the team.
Sorry, everyone.
But I don't know. Something about the cooperative. That is what makes Hanabi really funny too, because right. you forget stuff
and your teammates can remind you with subtle hints too. You
know. Yeah,
don't do it.
Yep. So yeah, that's my takeaway. I don't know, Trevor, how did you feel having forgotten?
Oh, you know, cards? I didn't even remember seeing that other 12, so I felt perfectly fine.
Sure.
I think I might have even been looking away when it was revealed. Yeah, and I just didn't clock it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, oh, well, you know, I didn't catch it.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. But yeah, and I think for me, like in terms of memory games, my takeaway would be that, you know, I really liked how this had multiple different types of memory, like people's hands, board in front of you. Like you had these different ways to remember or like different things to remember. Instead of it just being like, you know, a 10x10 grid of just information. It's like, yeah. Oh, my God, that's too much information. I can actually identify it with people and like, oh yeah, that person had this. Okay, great. And that'll help me remember things a little bit better and help me feel a little bit cleverer too.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when we're dealing with more finite information with just using the, you know, lowest or highest card. And so I think, yeah, having multiple different places to remember is really helpful in helping you remember.
Mm-hmm.
If that made sense.
Yeah. Well, and you made me think about like, so I think there are, we'll probably talk about this more as the series goes along, but like there's aspects of memory in a lot of games that mm-hmm. aren't necessarily meant to be memory things, but it's kind of like, well, we can't track everything in this game. Some of it has just a memory aspect that the designers probably just gave up and said, well, we'll just let people remember this like state of the game or I don't know. I'm trying to think of an example, but I guess a personal example in my game Four Humors, some people have said, because in that game you're placing your tokens face down
mm-hmm.
on cards. And I've always said like, well, the house rule can be you can peek at your own tokens if you forgot what they are.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't realize how some people get really anxious when there's any sort of memory aspect to a game. That's not really meant to be a memory game.
I have a terrible memory. I don't know if I can remember.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
Yep. So, I don't know. I learned from that, like, some people are like, well, if you forgot, you aren't able to look. And I'm like, no, I want people to have fun. So maybe as a designer, just put in like a house rule, like, hey, this is the friendly rule. If you forget what you put down, you can look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could do the inverse and say, if you want to be more competitive, you could not look at it again and just have the looking at it be a core thing in the game.
Yeah.
Yes. Because I know some people get a little self-conscious, like if they don't remember things very well. And so like having it be ingrained into the base rules instead of it being a variant that they could do, have that be the core, and then the variant could be the more challenging thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
And of course, another approach I suppose you could use, which is a little more out there, but using, Charlie, something like your glasses, you know,
yeah.
if it's a two-player game and each player is a different color of glasses, then you can write the things so that they're face up and you can just look at them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eventually, every game will include these glasses.
these really high-tech visors.
Yep. I mean, actually, a more practical could be like alternate reality.
Augmented reality.
Yeah, thank you.
Alternate reality.
Where the, the backs of the tokens or whatever, or cards.
Oh, that's true.
Have.
Ooh.
Have some
limitless potential.
Well, they'd have to have some probably like QR code that humans can't tell the difference, but something like a QR code.
I think they're able to do that now with the whole card in a sense, but maybe I just saw something online that was like that.
Or, I mean, possibly the glasses could just track the location of the cards as long as I don't know how you'd implement it, but.
Yeah.
The future is now.
This is a small tangent, but I thought it was interesting. I was learning about card trick decks.
Yeah.
And like the where the backs of the cards look identical unless you really know what you're looking for. But there's like subtle little hints on the backs of these trick decks so you can know like what's on the front.
Yep.
Yeah.
I had one of those once.
Oh.
I did not get that good at it.
Well, on that note, any final thoughts on Trio? Or
I was surprised. You know, it made me think of Go Fish initially.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a huge fan of Go Fish.
Yeah,
I thought this game was pretty good.
I would love to add on to my takeaway really quick. Made me realize after I was done talking that it kind of takes a concept from Mind Palaces, if you're familiar with that memory tool for people. Like, there's a center place, and then the people represent the different things. And so you're kind of helping yourself remember things a little bit better because you can kind of remember, like, oh, yeah, Charlie 2, Ananda 3. And, like, it just, it's not exactly the same, but just kind of a little, like, stepping stone into that thought process, which is interesting.
Yeah, and even the way you arrange the cards in the middle is kind of like, I arranged it in a 3x3 grid.
Right, yeah.
And I was thinking of like, you know, top, bottom, middle.
Well, and you could think cardinal directions.
Even like that helps,
The north, south, northwest corner. It's like, oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As humans, we'll use anything to help us remember stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I had one quick side note on Trio that, you know, we had the situation where I think I was dealt 3 12s or something. And I kind of just wanted to redeal and start. I don't know if there's an official rule about that, but it feels like if you have a trio in your hand, maybe you just redeal. Another house rule that we tried, because I tried this with a game group, they didn't love it because of that fact, like, oh, well, what if someone just gets a really good hand?
Yeah.
So we tried a house rule where you can't make trios with your own hand. And actually, that went over way better with this group for some reason.
That makes sense.
So, yeah, that's another, like, minor game design thing. It's like people, it's weird. Like, people want a challenge. They don't want to just instantly win. So,
yeah.
Anyways, small side note, like the game though. Yeah. All right. So tune in next time when we talk about
Mamma Mia. Hey, Thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.